Welcome to the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast, where business leaders tell their stories and share their insights. All our guests have a personal connection with Nottingham Business School, so listen, learn, enjoy, and share.
Welcome to another episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast with me, Mike Sassy. Dr. Anino Emuwa is an award-winning management consultant and passionate advocate for women's leadership. She began her career as a corporate financier with Citibank, but after a decade in banking, she moved to France, where she founded her own global strategy and financial advice company, Avantis Consulting. Since then, she has become a much sought-after advisor and speaker on corporate governance, diversity and inclusion, and sustainable leadership, in particular in tech. In recent years, she has addressed both the Forbes Women's Summit and the Global Women's Forum. She has also established several influential networks, including the Network of African Women CEOs and 100 Women at Davos, a global community of female leaders convening every year at the World Economic Forum. For the last 4 years, she has also been a member of the board of Nottingham Trent University, all of which means we are very proud to welcome Dr. Anino Emuwa to this episode of the NBS Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Mike.
So, you're a financier and a business strategist by trade, but you're also a passionate advocate for women's leadership. So, what inspired you to take that road?
You know, after my first degree, which was economics at the London School of Economics, I returned back home to Nigeria, where I started my career as a corporate banker with Citibank. And here I was, very young, at the age of 22, and I was creating loans and writing loan packages for multinationals, millions of dollars worth, at a very young age. But then it occurred to me, when I looked around, that there were entrepreneurial gaps in the market. And I was interested in entrepreneurship. I came back to the UK to do a degree, my MBA, where every good banker goes off to do an MBA. But secretly, I was sort of doing taking entrepreneurial courses as well, and trying to understand what this problem was and what this phenomenon was about. And went back again, you know, went back into banking. But at the same time, I realized still we had all these gaps in the entrepreneurial market. And I felt that as a developing country, that we needed to build up our local businesses and entrepreneurs. I had the opportunity to live in 3 or 4 different African countries. And in each country, I saw the same thing, lack of finance to entrepreneurs. And of course, I was lending to big businesses, so I understood the processes in terms of lending to a company. But small businesses weren't getting finance. And I said to myself, I think back to my macroeconomic roots, if businesses are not getting financing in Africa, then what is that doing to our economies? And so that was what made me become very interested in entrepreneurship and financing entrepreneurs. And as an independent consultancy, I had independent women entrepreneurs. I was running a seminar many decades ago for women entrepreneurs. And I had done some research actually on women's entrepreneurship in when I was back in Cranfield, without calling to women's entrepreneurship actually. It just happened that women were the were my target, right, for my research. And then I realized women were facing even more barriers than, you know, entrepreneurs as a whole. And I think that's really what sparked my interest in women's entrepreneurship, women in business, women's leadership, starting from entrepreneurship.
And is there a specific issue with regard to women and small business?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I think there is a problem. One, women very often do not have the kinds of networks, right, that you need in business, tend to very often go it alone. And that is for many different reasons. One, I think, because if you look at women's sort of traditional role, if you have responsibilities, right, caregiving and all of that, there's probably not very much time. But also, there are also certain biases which are unconscious biases, because the field of business has traditionally, since the industrial ages, right, very often been biased towards men. So naturally, women are locked out of the networks, locked out of financing, locked out of knowledge and market, and out of markets as well. Sometimes you have cultural as well, cultural biases that limit women to certain sort of smaller sort of businesses. So many, many obstacles, really.
And you say that traditionally, women have been locked out of business. And what's quite interesting is that I must confess, I sat and listened to a quite a mesmerizing speech that you gave in some, I think it was in Athens actually, about how, and this goes on, how women are actually locked out of AI. A better way to put that is AI is biased against women. You did a great presentation there. Just recap a little bit of that for us.
Yes, I started off being interested in emerging technologies because that's the future. So here we are trying to get inclusion into the business world today, but that is based on almost on the past, you know, the structures of the past. So that's what got me into emerging technologies and obviously into AI. But in my research and looking at what is happening in that field, I came across an experiment which I tried. And this was an experiment which went as follows. So a prompt went into a generative AI, into ChatGPT, which said something like this. So a quote, "The doctor said to the nurse, 'Why are you late?' And he was angry." Something like that. So who was angry? And the answer is the doctor. Simply because it said he. When you change the question round and said she was angry, it then said it was the nurse that was angry. So it ascribed the female pronoun to the nurse and the male pronoun to the doctor automatically. This frightened me.
Yes, I was inspired. I went and did, I stopped the presentation when I was listening to it. I thought, that can't be right. And I stopped the presentation and did it myself. Oh my goodness. The doctor shouted at the nurse because he was late, who was late. The doctor shouted at the nurse because she was late, who was late. And each time it prescribed the doctor as the man, the nurse as the woman. I couldn't, I must admit, I was genuinely gobsmacked. So, and I thought, am I the last person in the world to see that? No, but no, it is incredible. So as you say, new technologies are based on everything that's gone before.
Oh, absolutely, because these are based on the large language models are based on the things that people have put in. So all it's doing, if you're not careful, it's institutionalizing those biases, right? You know, where's the source of the language? Where did that come from? So this is one of the areas that we look at and we advocate for, which is basically inclusive and gender bias-free artificial intelligence.
So let's go back to the beginning. So you were born in Nigeria, as you say. Your mum was a lawyer who became one of the very first women to be called to the bar in Nigeria 60 years ago. 30 years later, she became one of the first Nigerian women to become a fellow of the Institute of Directors here in Britain. She must have been quite an inspiration to you.
You know, it's looking back, or at least in my adulthood, that I realized it. Because you know what? When you grow up like that, it's normal. That is how I grew up thinking that it was normal. In fact, I remember one day, on a Saturday, and in those days, I think my mother worked in the mornings, off to a corporate organization. So I was at home, and she came back, and she drove in. And I had this flash of knowledge, and oh my goodness. I said, now, I've just figured out that lawyers, right, the legal profession is a profession for women. But it wasn't in that positive sense. Somewhere along the line, at that age of, I was certainly under the age of 10, I must have been 7 or 8. Somewhere along the line, my exterior environment had taught me that there were jobs for women and there were jobs for men. Even though in my home, my mother was a lawyer. So it was a combination of what I knew from home and what I had learned, and my thinking had been shaped from my environment. In fact, there is a beautiful test, right, with young children at school who are under the age of about 7, 6, 7. And when you ask them, you know, draw what's the name of an astronaut or what's the name of a scientist or the name of a surgeon, all of that, 90% of them ascribe male names to all of that. But I love that experiment because at the end, what the teachers then did was to actually bring into the classroom you know, a female astronaut, a female surgeon, etc. So these subconscious biases start from very, very young. But really, so I then realized she was an inspiration, you know, many years later when it became clear to me that this was unusual, this wasn't the norm. But also, it also meant that for me, it was normal. We didn't see barriers.
I guess up until then, she'd just been your mum.
Exactly. She was just my mum. And this is what mums did, you know, so it was normal.
Okay. Yes. So at some point, you put two and two together and thought, oh, right.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Exactly.
So aside from your mum as an inspiration, well, what other key moments shaped your career, shaped your leadership?
Well, certainly, definitely in the banking world, you know, which I loved and which I adored. And then I moved into entrepreneurship and all of that. But, you know, I think it was when I started looking at the data closely and incredibly with a daughter of my own. And here she was going into business school. And she then said she wanted to go into investment banking, and she had applied for investment banking roles. And then we had a conversation, and I said, "Oh, how many others in your class? How many other, you know, young women in your class applied?" And she said, "None." And so I thought to myself, why, you know? And then I actually went back to the data, because if you look at the main sort of the main fields, right, that lead into banking, of course you can do any subject in these days, but the tendency is that if you've done economics or finance. And then when I looked at the data, then I realized how underrepresented women were in those kinds of natural feeder fields, right, as well. So there is also there's also that issue. But of course, the workplace is not the best for anybody, and, you know, certainly not for women either as well. I think women are less likely to accept, you know, certain kinds of, you know, work environments, you know.
The feeder streams didn't have women in them either. What do you put that down to?
It's a bit of a difficult, but I think is when I say cultural, what I mean is just historically that there's certain fields, like, I mean, I studied maths and it was normal. So it was never anything unusual, right? But traditionally, you know, for many decades, you know, maths and economics and the sciences were fields for men, and then English and all of that.
Is that changing?
It is changing. The interesting thing was that I grew up thinking all of these issues had been done in the generation before my mother.
Right.
It was then, you know, decades later, realizing that, no, you have a specific experience, but the reality outside, you know, outside your own world is actually very different. But it's changing now. It's changing, but it's changing too slowly. When we look at the figures, at this rate of progress, according to the World Economic Forum Gender Gap Report, which is published every year, the last one last year said 134 years before we reach equality. So it is changing, but far too slowly. And not only that, unfortunately, in recent years, there's also backlash. So there's some regression on some fronts as well, which is particularly scary.
What can be done to change that then?
Aha, they're asking me, that is my raison d'être. What can be done? Many things can be done. The first thing is, data is always a good thing. Let us know what the facts are. So the first thing is you have the facts. The second thing as well is a lot of sort of advocacy, because certainly policy and policy change does help. The other thing is for the education of the public. So starting from young children, young girls, young boys as well, starting from there. But also in the workplace, the thing is, it's not just a question of shall we say balance, gender balance. For its sake. Yes, you know, it's great to have for women in terms of rights and all of that. It's fantastic. But I think I must admit what concerns me even more than that is the effect it has on performance. Organizational performance studies have shown, McKinsey and great, you know, organizations like that have shown, organizational performance is higher, and there's actually a gender gap in performance, right? If you don't have balanced leadership teams. I tend to work in leadership. Number two, studies have shown that peace and security is better. Agreements are longer lasting when you have women. Women tend generally not to go to war. It's not that, I mean, we've had many women warriors and many women leading, but generally speaking, that's not the preferred modus operandi for women. Also, we even find that not just for women, men and women, societies are better off. So, for example, even for men, some studies have shown that where there's balanced leadership, you actually have less male suicides, for example. So there are just so many reasons. It's better for economy, society, societal development, for children. So we're losing a lot without.
So now we're going to take a quick break from our chat to mention the MBA programs at Nottingham Business School. As we've learned from many of our guests, effective business leadership is about confidence, adaptability, and thinking strategically. These are the key ingredients to delivering innovation and impact in crowded, competitive markets. So if you are ready to transform your career, visit ntu.ac.uk/MBA to explore the MBA programmes at Nottingham Business School. We're one of only 1% of business schools worldwide who hold the prestigious Triple Crown accreditation. That's ntu.ac.uk/MBA to find out more. Now back to the show. So at the beginning of that conversation, you talked about the requirement for advocacy, and you're a passionate advocate for women in leadership. When you're advocating, when you're mentoring women, what are the most common misconceptions about women in leadership roles that you face? Ones that really need to be challenged?
It is a challenge because one of the organizations I sit on the board of, which is called the Reykjavik Global Forum, which was actually set up to deal with this, does research every year. And it looks at how people perceive women and men to be suitable for leadership. And what you find that there's a gap, I mean, they do it across countries and across ages, that naturally, unconscious bias, that people, both men and women, but of course the gap tends to be more with men, actually feel that leadership roles are more suited for men and not for women. So you already have that bias. So if you have that bias, and obviously it means that, you know, women are looked over for leadership roles. You actually find also that when you look at the leadership qualities, none of the leadership qualities are really for women. They might be feminine in inverted commas, right? But they are not necessarily the best qualities for leadership. Are both men and women possess adequate.
And so, yes. So let me just clarify that point in my own head. So what you're saying is the what people think of as important leadership skills or attributes are not traditionally associated with women. Does that mean that the attributes are wrong, or does that mean that it's the association with men that's wrong?
It's I think we've just been socialized. We've just been socialized. And very often men don't actually realize that they actually play the part as well without realizing. That is to say that if, for example, it is looked at that, for example, that if you exhibit certain behavior and that is what makes you a leader, then you naturally do it to become a leader.
So you mean, so for example, let's say being strong, being loud and standing on a fruit on a fruit crate in the middle of the room and advocating strongly. Is that
exactly?
Is it the fact that that isn't actually required as a leadership skill, or is it the fact that it's traditionally thought that men do that rather than women?
It is, well, in today's world, it's actually not needed. If you think about it, right, even if you look at studies and academic studies, from the industrial age into our leadership, all those leadership frameworks, the industrial age was the time where families split up from, you know, working together in little homesteads, right, to the factories. Who went to the factories? Women did, actually, but mainly men, because women, if you had children, somebody had to be at home, right? And what you actually find is, so all those leadership theories have been built and the studies have been built around men because they were the ones who were in leadership. So the certain characteristics and attributes, right, are looked at as essential leadership attributes, where they're actually not. In fact, you would find that the best male leaders, right, okay, there are always exceptions, by the way, and we know many of them, obviously, but the best male leaders actually exhibit all those skills that you might even ascribe to be more feminine. But they are not going to say, not because they don't realize, they will call up certain other skills that they have, which are more attributed to men, because that is what you get rewarded for. But if you're successful as a leader, you're leading a team, You certainly have to know how to lead people. You have to know how to be collaborative. You have to know how to be empathetic. But men would never have said so because that's not what they have to exhibit certain things, right? But yet they actually are, if you're really successful and really good, you will have those skills as well. And those skills are perfectly, women also possess those skills.
And it's interesting you say that because you talked right in the middle of there about some, you dropped a word in the middle there that comes up in every one of these 65 podcasts I've done. The word has come every time, collaboration. That is such a key leadership skill, it would appear now. And what you're saying is, yes, it's required. And yes, male leaders recognize it's required and all the good ones have it. But they don't focus on that too much when they're saying what's really good because, hey, that's not what's traditionally thought of as a strong leader.
Yes, because, I mean, you know, if you write your own, so as a senior leader, of course, maybe you write your own review at the end of the year, you're not going to, you know, now people are recognizing, especially through COVID, it's certainly changing. There's no doubt about it. But prior to COVID, very often, a lot of this wasn't actually realized, wasn't actually recognized, whereas it's used. And these are the techniques that any leader would use. It's completely important.
Okay, so when you went to mentor women leaders, is there one piece of advice, given what you've just said, that you just keep find yourself giving over and over again?
Oh, to women leaders? Oh, I do. One thing that I say is that it's easy to keep looking at the barriers, right? One thing I say is be intentional and step into the space, right? Be visible.
So what do you mean by that?
Okay, it means if you may find that you're not right putting yourself forward for certain things because of, in the past, very often what happens is that you put a foot out and then you still push back into the space, right? But things are changing now. So you actually have to put yourself out there. You actually have to seek those positions. You have to be prepared for those positions, right? In a different way. And when I say in a different way, because we're talking about leaders now, because very often what happens for women are excellent, even academically. We see that, and women now, in terms of numbers of degrees, tend to have more, the proportion of women getting degrees higher than their male peers. So women tend to acquire more and more certification and this and that, right? But whereas the other things you need, one, you need to network. You need to build up your contact base. You need to actually be present at some of these forum that we've talked about, for example. You have to be seen and you have to engage, right? And not just expect. Very often is that the work speaks for itself, which it does in academia. You know, in all the time you're sort of in school, first in class, etc., it speaks for itself. But when you get into the business world, it's a bit different. So networks and visibility and being in certain spaces are critically important if you want to progress.
Which leads us beautifully onto what you do. You lead several influential networks, like Women at Davos. You in great demand as a guest speaker, diversity, sustainability, women in tech. How do you balance this, dare I say it, this campaigning with the day job of running a successful business?
I'm not sure I balance it, actually. The reason, when you're doing something that has a mission at the end of it, I am sure I'm not going to achieve my mission. The reason I say that is, yes, it sounds odd.
It does indeed.
Exactly.
You're sure you're never going to achieve your mission?
Yes, what's that? In my lifetime. The reason being that what my mission would be to see equality, right, or equity, let's call it equity, because equality sounds more like numbers, right? Just equity in terms of leadership, right? Because that is really what's best for our world, equity. Now, the thing is, will it happen in my lifetime? No, it won't. So that means that, you know, the more you do the work, the more you realize there is more to do. So the balance sometimes, you know, the balance sort of disappears, right? The balance disappears. But I think that also is responsibility as well. When you look at what you're responsible for, whether it's your clients, whether it's your staff, which is what you're doing, then that also absolutely drives you.
So you delegate well, do you?
Not that well, but I try to. I could be better delegation. There's no doubt about it, because when you're clear about certain things and you want it done, sometimes, you know, you tend to do a lot yourself. So I could be better delegation, without a doubt. But delegation is critical and key in terms of really in terms of growth, especially in today's world, really. We're working a lot at distance with people working from home and all of that. So you have to have the ability to delegate tasks to others, yes.
Okay, so as you say, a busy world. How do you recharge your batteries outside of work? You have other passions?
Oh, plenty. Well, the first thing is that family is very important for me. Family is absolutely important, which is apart from my immediate family, my extended family. So spending lots of time with my extended family, especially not living in the same country as they are, becomes critically important. So my mother is elderly now. I lost my father. I have my sisters, my brother, and, you know, on my husband's side as well, you know, his own siblings as well. And so we have big family get-together, you know, at Christmas, different times of the year. Critically important. That's family. It's key.
Good stuff. So, as you know, this is an episode of the Business Leaders Podcast for Nottingham Business School, where the current and future generations of leaders are studying. What advice picked up in your junior career so far might you have for these people?
One, the world sort of seems very uncertain. If we look at youth unemployment in the UK, for example, is much higher than general unemployment. And so, you know, young students might feel a little bit anxious. But what's interesting in today's world is that they're no longer just here to work for jobs, right? They're here to sort of solve problems, right? So look at what problem do you want to solve? What skills do you need to solve that problem? Because in the reality is that probably in 5 years' time, 20 to 30% of the jobs that are in the market today won't exist. So it's the skills that you have and that adaptability. So I think it's move into the world, enter into the world with excitement, but prepare. You have to be constantly acquiring new skills. We talk about, for example, micro-credentials. So it's no longer just the one degree, which is great. When you start off with the one degree, it's perfect, but you need to be constantly ready to skill up yourself.
Continuous learning.
Continuous learning, completely. Continuous learning and really skills development. Things are changing by the minute. I mean, there are jobs today that didn't even exist. How many people knew about an AI prompt engineer until a year ago?
Yes.
You know.
And so, yeah. So your advice is be aware of this and grasp it.
Be aware of it and grasp it, because it's actually quite exciting what's happening. But you have to be part of it and not because you can get left behind, right, with the pace of movement. And the thing is, I mean, if you think about it, young people today, they are digitally native anyway, so it's easy for them to embrace technology. People like ourselves, we've had to make the effort, right? So embrace the technology, look at what's happening, engage with the right people, and be ready for that journey. And I think it's an exciting one for young people today.
Great stuff. Dr. Anino Amuwa, thanks very, very much for being our guest here on the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast.
Thank you, Professor Mike Sassy. Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Nottingham Business School Business Leaders Podcast with Dr. Anino Amuwa, why not listen to previous episodes with the Chair of the Football Association, Debbie Hewitt, MBE, the CEO of Capital One UK, Lucy Marie Hagues, MBE, Paralympic gold medalist, Charlotte Henshaw, MBE, and co-founder of the Amazing If company, Sarah Ellis. This episode of the Nottingham Business School's Business Leaders Podcast was produced by Russell Bingley and presented by Mike Sassy.